everybody.
Welcome to the post game, y'all.
That was a little bit of that music there, if you heard. A little bit of a treat for you post gamers. That's Christoph Brune. I know him by as Chris, my friend who we got to do the music. That's a little teaser. That's not the full version, but that's one of the songs he came up with us, and I hope you enjoyed it. It gets me pumped. It feels very prime time to me. Like the start of a Cowboys game or something.
Hell yeah, I like that analogy. Well, actually, though, honestly, not this year, but other years, it sounds about right. No. I'm really excited. Everybody, welcome to the post game. I'm really happy to be doing these again, man. It feels like it has been like over a month since we were doing these with TMBS. So we're going to go through some sound, hang out a little bit, much more casual. For people who aren't familiar, we're going to be taking questions from the Discord. So in the Discord, I believe in the if you post and you at the mod in the hashtag live discussion chat room, those will be posted for us so that we can get to them. So definitely get to that. But before we get to some of these questions, we want to spread a little bit of good news and hear some wise words from the OG, Bernie Sanders, who, as we were doing our last episode of Left Reckoning, was spitting some truth on CNN.
Yeah, here he is with Anderson Cooper of
of the Trump's Vanderbilt
racist
family.
Talking, you said, yeah, Vanderbilt. here he is.
What to do? Let me just be very clear. As the incoming chairman of the Senate Budget Committee, I remember what happened in 2010, and that is the Democrats during the 2008-2010 period controlled the White House, they controlled the Senate, controlled the House. You remember that? Mm-hmm. And you remember what happened in 2010? Democrats got wiped out. They had the power, but they did not deliver for the American people. So what we have got to do right now, no ifs, buts, or maybes, is have an aggressive agenda that says we understand that millions of people, including my neighbors right here in Vermont, people lining up in their cars in order to get emergency food. People can't pay their medical bills. People are going deeper and deeper into debt. People are facing eviction. Millions of people have lost their jobs. We have to act and act now. And the first order of business, by the way, is to pass an emergency COVID-19 bill, which, among many other things, says to working class Americans, we know you're in pain. And we're going to get you a $2,000 check for every working class adult in this country. We are on your side. We are prepared to take on the big money interests who have so much power. We're going to expand healthcare to cover the uninsured. We're going to deal with student debt. We have got to be bold in a way that we have not seen since FDR in the 1930s.
I mean, it's exactly right. And that's why they were so afraid of Bernie Sanders. Have done everything that they can to destroy him. I mean, he's out there fighting him. If there ever was a pressure campaign, these $2,000 checks are quite attainable, especially now that Biden and the crooked Democrats, came out and endorsed in those in the Georgia Senate runoff. Right. We need to make sure that they follow through on that promise. We need much more than $2,000, a one-off $2,000 payment, but we also
right. I was going to say like that. That should be. I mean, it should be in our pockets, right? Like that. Mm-hmm. Like we shouldn't have to pressure them. Hopefully, more on that. I think we're going to get that.
I hope so.
It would be. I mean, it would right off the bat. It would be just a colossal failure. But the truth is, like, we need more than that, right? That's like mm-hmm. I said about that's fielding the grounder, right? That won you power. Of course, you should do that. But it needs to go a lot farther than what Joe Biden's talking about, specifically on like student loan cancellation. Mm-hmm. You need to. Okay, you might not do Medicare for all. I think they should. But like, mm-hmm. there are all sorts of other things like expanding these, and also things that Obama didn't do in those period, like the card check stuff. Like there are all sorts of things that you need to get in there and show initiative. That because that fundamentally that's the only thing that's going to get through to people in this, right? Like. Mm-hmm. Like you, that is the there's a overly reductive thing that says those people stormed the Capitol because they just wanted $2,000 checks. But the truth is, like, that the problems we have in this country are because of this class stratification, right? Like we talked about, it was the PPP loan guys who were storming Congress. You need to do something for the people who are worst off, who are getting evicted. And again, like you said earlier, $2,000 is not nearly enough. Some sort of recurringness needs to be added to that, that Pelosi signed away mm-hmm. in the opening of these negotiations. And eviction moratoriums. There shouldn't be people being evicted at all. But yeah, I don't know. Do you have anything more you want to say?
No, I mean, it's just, this is a historic moment in the same way that 2008 was a historic moment. I mean, honestly, it's sort of hilarious to think that Biden's been in an important position in two very consequential moments in American history. One coming into office after the financial crisis, and now coming into office again after the COVID crisis. And we're in a very similar situation where the Democrats have control, not as much as they did in 2008, but they have control over these bodies. They have undeniable at this point public mandate to address this crisis.
It wasn't just, let's just be clear, it wasn't just Ossoff and Warnock that endorsed $2,000 checks. It was ultimately their opponents as well.
Yeah. And Joe Biden, you know, like they can't walk this back. And, this is a time when we need to be really vigilant, because what we're going to see almost immediately, I can see, is hedging and walking back and coming up with very clever ways to say, we did $2,000 checks, you know, to this one very small subset of the population and not provide them for everybody. Don't accept any nonsense from them because it's coming. And I'm really thankful that Bernie Sanders is going to be in a more powerful position in the Senate for this, because, you know, the way it's undemocratic, don't get me wrong, but the way that our government is set up, having an ally like Bernie in a powerful position in the Senate can really make a huge difference, because the Senate, a couple people can really drive policy.
Yeah. One person that is going to be driving policy in the opposite direction we want in the Senate is the Delaware Senator, friend of Joe Biden, Chris Coons. And here he was, on CNBC talking about, like, for also statehood, though, like, I think statehood should happen. DC definitely. And you know, I, Puerto Rico, I guess, is more complicated locally, but mm-hmm. I guess my inclination is towards statehood there as well. But anyway, I'll leave that off the table. But here's Chris Coons talking about this stuff.
I'm a close friend and supporter of President-elect Biden, and he ran on an agenda that included bringing America together, working across the aisle, and delivering sustainable solutions to the challenges facing Americans. If we have a Senate that's divided 50-50, that makes it very hard to do some of the things you just suggested, like recognizing Puerto Rico as a state. And I think the message that was just sent to the people of Georgia and to the Senate and to the people of the United States by these elections last night was folks want us to stop the division, chasing Trump's
shut up.
Trying to overturn the election, and work together and deliver real relief. I'm a close.
Yeah, real relief.
I mean, just shut up at a certain point. I mean, we talk about this all the time. We talk about it on the show many times. We talk about it with Malaika. It's ridiculous that they're still trying to run this playbook. And just giving the wrong message of what happened in this most recent election. The wrong interpretation of what the voters were saying.
I mean, look, like, there's a model where that is fine. It's where that's just PR. Like when the Republicans say that sort of stuff, well, to be fair, they're also working with corporatist Democrats. So it's not, this is a disanalogy. There's a lot of disanalogies here. But yeah, I guess that's where it falls apart, but, mm-hmm. You're never going to see, yeah, I guess I don't have anything more to say about that.
It's a joke. And, we're just going to have to be prepared. These are going to be, this next couple of months, honestly, are going to be very telling.
Yeah. And we're going to see a lot about Manchin. We're going to see a lot about Coons. And I'm curious which other senators are going to be, like, Manchin loves it because.
Oh, yeah.
But I mean, ultimately, Chris Coons would have said that if they didn't take back those Senate mm-hmm. seats, right? Like, we can't do any of this stuff. He's the we can't do it guy. Yeah, I mean, he's the, like, we can't do it about, should we have let, like, what was it, women vote? Or what was the...
Oh, I don't know what you mean.
There was a very, it was something like that, like pretty crazy, like things, democratizing movements of the 20th century. He had some downsides from a senator's perspective.
Oh, so very like, interesting.
He's that kind of guy.
Yeah.
So like,
oh, it's too bad that we have popular election for senators now versus just being old boys club that gets to decide who's in the most powerful, you know, office, statewide office in the country. Jesus Christ. Yeah, screw him. And we just have to be prepared to fight. I mean, it's going to be really intense. And I'm telling y'all, you know, we're going to do our best to make sure we bring as much to the forefront as possible. But a lot of these things are going to be real subtle. Like a lot of these fights aren't going to be big headline fights. They're going to be rule changes in the Department of Labor. They're trying to undo what Donald Trump has done over the past 4 years, because what he has done through executive authority has been very devastating. We've given some examples of that from what he's done to Indian country with, you know, preventing, you know, through the FCC, preventing Native tribes from getting payments from companies like T-Mobile and Sprint. You know, for consulting there, to these new rules coming out of the Department of Labor, there's going to be a lot of things that need to be undone by the Biden administration that aren't going to be like the kind of sexiest fights that are going to pop up on Twitter or on the New York Times. But these are very consequential decisions that can be undone if there's enough pressure and awareness on the Biden administration to make sure that they happen.
Yeah. And as we mentioned in about the Vilsack, needing Vilsack as a Secretary of Agriculture, it's not a, there's not good science in terms of his personnel on these choices. Mm-hmm. So yeah,
you muted yourself.
Muted myself. Should we move from Democrats to Republicans?
Why not?
Or are they Republicans? It's hard to tell because what we all thought was a far right mob, you know, disrupting the business of Congress yesterday. There's a new theory about this. Now, the Texas Attorney General, you know, got involved, and he says, let's bring this up here. Texas Attorney General ups the ante, says Antifa false flag op is confirmed. he appears to mean that there is now not only a tweet about it, but also a Washington Times headline. So this is Ken Paxton. Both stormed. Oh, this is about the facial recognition stuff.
Yeah, bring it up, make it big so they can see it.
So yeah, we can't. These are kind of
they're screenshot. Yeah,
screenshot. But yeah, come back. So those who stormed the Capitol yesterday were not Trump supporters. That, talk about a big lie. Jesus Christ. Yeah. They have been confirmed to be Antifa. Violence is not the answer. And yeah, it's this stuff. Former FBI agent on the ground. Oh, a former FBI agent. Here we got credibility. On the ground at the U.S. Capitol just texted me and confirmed that at least one busload of Antifa thugs. Of course. Yeah. Now, let's also move to our, you know, Sarah Palin, who...
Oh, was on fire last night.
Yeah.
What was...
Sarah Palin, this clip is amazing.
Oh,
Sarah Palin just going wild. She was going wild.
I mean, she's a true patriot, and she knows what patriots
she's
do.
A true, she's
do.
A true patriot.
So we have her on Fox News.
My next guest says that she is outraged over the, quote, insincere fake D.C. patriots who showed up today. Former Alaska governor and former GOP vice presidential nominee Sarah Palin joins me now. Governor Palin, good to have you with us tonight.
Oh.
What do you mean by that when you call these people fake patriots?
Because anybody who would storm the Capitol and create this, at least a perception of condoned violence, is not.
I just want to say, these are the types of like Glenn Beck types who talk about how they're the heirs of the Tea Party and how sometimes you got to, you know, don't tread on me and the blood of the tree of liberty is watered by the blood of patriots, that sort of stuff, right? So I mean, look, I don't think these people should have exercised violence, but that's who we are. Anyway, this gets only more confused over the next minute here.
What do you mean by that when you call these people fake patriots?
Because anybody who would storm the Capitol and create this, at least a perception of condoned violence, is not a true patriot, is not one who is supporting law and order, which is a foundation that the conservatives stand upon. So, you know, what Mark was just saying, though, Martha, is so spot on about how dangerous it is in our time in society to not be able to trust the media. And I've been saying this for years and years. When we can't trust on either side, really, what the information that's being fed to us, then, yeah, things like this will be a result because.
So almost immediately walks back what she said at the beginning, where she said these people aren't patriots, and then says, well, actually, this is happening because there's bad information, which leaves the door open to the idea that these are just misled patriots. Right.
Right.
It's a joke.
And she's saying it on the number one, the dominant cable news network of our time.
Yeah.
Right. Like, yes, there is a big misinformation problem with our capitalist media empires, Sarah, and people can't really trust it.
But it's not a Trump media anymore. Like Fox News is not Trump media.
That's
right?
Not Trump media. Yeah. Oh, there's one moment. Well, we'll talk about that later. Let's finish with Sarah Palin here.
There's so much frustration out there that some misguided, very, very wrong-headed yahoos are out there causing this mayhem. And we don't, and a lot of it is the
mayhem. So pig that you butcher in.
It's a summer pig. Summer pig.
Media's fault. But Martha.
Okay. Note the shift here again. Like David already mentioned, it goes from Antifa. And then to like maybe confused by the media patriots, and then
there's so much frustration out there that some misguided, very, very wrong-headed yahoos are out there causing this mayhem. And we don't, and a lot of it is the media's fault. But Martha, keep in mind, we don't know who all were the instigators in this, of these horrible things that happened today. I think a lot of it is the Antifa folks. I've been nice. Sent pictures of the same characters who were captured on images today storming the Capitol, as had been in protests on the other side of politics earlier in the summer. So I don't know. There's a lot of questions out there, and I wish we could trust the media to do its job to go research.
You're muted.
Maybe Fox News can ask somebody to look into that. But I just want to highlight this Law Boy Esquire tweet at the _law_boy, because this is really what this amounts to, this argument. And this is the dominant narrative coming from the conservatives now. Which is the leading right-wing conspiracy theory is that a handful of clever leftists used crowd control tactics to trick thousands of patriots into storming a federal building, a theory that requires the MAGA protesters to be literally as dumb as a basic herd animal.
Honestly, I think that's the cherry on top. What else can you say? I mean, this conspiracy theory is obviously ludicrous from the get-go, when in fact, you know, the main characters that we're seeing aren't Antifa, but are people who you can see photographs of them with Don Jr., Rudy Giuliani. I mean, these guys are fanboys of the Trump media empire. These guys are gamers. I saw some of the guys who dressed up as bison. They had a tattoo from the video game Dishonored. like, to call these people Antifa is like, you can say a lot about these folks, but you know, calling them Antifa is probably one of the most ludicrous ones that you can do. But at the end of the day, man, I mean, we all know listening to this that, you know, there is one, there's no evidence to this claim. And two, there's not even the commitment. Like Sarah Palin can't even commit to saying they're Antifa because she keeps on waffling on it. Right. It's just classic trying to move, you know, make sure that you have no responsibility for the incitement that you participated in. And Sarah Palin in particular, is such a precursor to today's Trump movement too. You know, don't let these people rehabilitate themselves.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Trump was really the best thing that happened for Sarah Palin, because she really was the because she was such a, you know, dimbag from Alaska. Yeah. Like, she was the low mark for how far can American politics fall that this woman got nominated for, didn't win, but got nominated. And yeah, damn, crazy person. And it is, that's a really insane lie to have to stick to.
Yeah, that it's Antifa.
Yeah, and like it's interesting, like Pelosi said something like, because the Republicans, which I think you need to do, the Republicans are still doing this shit. And if you are in Congress, you need to point out that they're doing this. Like, don't act like you have unity again if half of these motherfuckers are still saying that, you know, there was something to that. True. And also, like, it's Antifa, but everybody else was just, you know, checking up on the Constitution.
Yeah, exactly.
And yeah, I don't know. I mean, what a fucking crazy time we live in, man.
Baked Alaska. I mean, honestly, it's so funny how nihilistic all these people are. Matt and I are actually talking about this a little bit before the stream. But like, so I think what happened with the Boaters Rebellion, the dumb coup, whatever you want to call it, yesterday, it is very frightening to just see the ability of these people to mobilize, right? And more scary, I think, is the complicity of the the security apparatus in this country to encourage them. That is scary. So I'm not downplaying that at all. But it is also just endlessly fascinating to me how many of these actors are just really, really cynical. It's all irony. I mean, it's just irony. I was talking about earlier. So like these guys come in there dressed up in these insane costumes and taking selfies to show the boys back home. I mean, it really is a part of it. I think especially the youth wing of it is such a horrible outpouring of a kind of detached irony, bro, internet culture, you know, meme culture, where everything is a joke, including the United States Capitol and fascism. And, you know, people like Baked Alaska, I mean, who's a real joke. And if you don't know who that is, like, don't even bother looking it up. If your brain has been poisoned by being online too much to see this moron, don't introduce yourself to it. But, you know, these characters are jokers and are like living embodiments of meme culture. And it's, I don't know, it's just a weird development in like American proto-fascism or whatever you want to call it. So much of it is this like irony bro kind of character, just real detached.
Yeah, it's... Yeah, I don't know. I do think it's fascinating. I don't have anything, I guess, conclusive to say on it, but it is.
Yeah.
Like we talked about Baked Alaska early on a different stream, I think maybe on TMBS before we were on this, but just going around and harassing employees them work, serve him without a mask on, and go buckles when cops come. Mm. And again, like flying all over the country, making huge money on this.
It's very strange.
Anyway, well, let's talk, or I was just going to suggest we talk about these oil executives, but if you want to do something more serious,
I don't know, why don't we take a couple of Discord questions before we get there. So again, you know, for people, since this is new for some folks, you can ask us questions on Discord by going to live discussion and adding @mod so we can get to them.
I'm not sure where my phone went, but
okay. I have it in front of me. If you need, I
can just do that right
here. Our first one is from Giuliano. I'm really sorry if I mispronounce your name. Do you think we should clarify that there's a double standard and that it is a good thing when we riot for reform and justice, and a bad thing when they protest to keep Trump in office? I feel like we're getting obsessed with talk of fairness versus hypocrisy and forgetting there's an actual conflict here.
Yes. I mean, that's why I've been stressing there's a difference in protest between form and content, right? Mm-hmm. Like a slave rebellion isn't the same as a race riot just because they use violent tactics. So yes, I think that's why, that's why it's a difficult thing to emphasized correctly, because the problem here isn't that cops didn't like use violence. It's that there's a complicity in allowing them to breach and an under preparation for the threat that they posed. Right. Like there's zero doubt that they couldn't have stopped those people and set up more of a barrier, because guess what? They have massive amounts or barriers there now, right? They have a huge barrier set up and there's National Guard and stuff, right? Mm-hmm. All of that stuff, those were all decisions, mm-hmm. I think. So I think that needs to be stressed. Yeah.
I think that's 100% on point. I mean, there's a few different tendencies that we saw yesterday. And, you know, one was like correct kind of outrage and horror and frustration seeing this. And then there was a kind of like, we don't protest, right? Like, you know, doing this kind of activity is just bad on its face. That was ignoring the content and what they were trying to do. And what they were trying to do in that moment was to disallow a democratic vote from happening or being recognized by Congress, right? And I think that it is important to make that distinction.
Yeah, and I think like the equivalence is not there at all. Like even in Portland, the worst they were doing to the courthouse was shooting fireworks at, as far as I remember. Yeah. And we're treated with literally like DHS flying across the country to snatch people up in the middle of groups without even identifying themselves. I think the hypocrisy, I think there is something important to stress with the hypocrisy, but I agree that it's not, you know, this, you know, we want everyone shot in the face.
Yeah, definitely not. We don't want to, the lesson from this is not to empower the cops or to say that the tactics that they use to quell protests are good. The bigger distinction to be made is that how does the security apparatus view protesters if they're right wing or left wing, and to make that point, I think that that's the more important development.
This is a tangent before we get to another question, but you know, thinking of Congress as a occupation tactic is, I think, you know, makes a lot of sense historically for all the different, you know, times but like especially I was just tossing around the idea of leftist occupations of like corporate headquarters or certain things like that. That seems a lot more, because everyone I think is rightly recognizing that, yes, you would have got mowed down. If you're reaching through a door at like Congress members and you're doing it for like any kind of leftist thing. Mm-hmm. Yes. Good luck.
No, I mean, one of the most important, critical social movement in the United States is the, you know, American Indian movement. And one of the major tactics that they used was occupying the Bureau of Indian Affairs, which was not, you know, looking out for them, was quite hostile. And, you know, basically saying like, no, this is like an agency that is supposed to be, you know, working in tandem with us. And we're taking ownership of that. I don't mind that kind of tactic. I don't mind things.
That's what the KC tenants are pretty much doing.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
Like, you're not going to be able to use this courthouse to evict people.
Exactly. I think there's nothing. I think that, you know, the tactic itself and, you know, is one thing. And I think it's really important that to not separate tactics from messaging or from goals. I think that's a really great point that the questioner had on this. Are you ready for some more? Okay. Joe has a little bit of a longer one, so I'm going to try to synthesize it a little bit. I hope I'm doing a good job for you. After yesterday, it's clear that most leftists are missing the fact that the right wing is transitioning from a political movement into an armed insurgency with political elements. It would be valuable to help people understand the progression and tactics of this hybrid adversary, as well as that knowledge will help us to properly define and frame their actions in a way that will counter their message. We need to equip ourselves to win this new fight. Otherwise, we risk being caught fighting yesterday's war. Right now, they are winning. Do you guys know anyone in left media spaces already on this beat? So I think there's a couple things here. I think that what happened yesterday was certainly a recognition of a part of the right-wing movement that is willing to engage in these kind of activities. I think that it would be a little bit of an overstatement to overstate their power and their organization. I mean, like, don't get me wrong. They were able to get a lot of people to show up in Washington, D.C. to host a massive protest that ended up, you know, storming the Capitol building. But a big part of that, as we've been talking about, is the complicity of the security apparatus and not necessarily brilliant strategic organizing from these characters, right? That being said, there is 100%, and we've been living through a time, you know, of immense difficulty and danger and death, as we've seen from the neo-Confederate, you know, rally in Charlottesville, you know, that killed folks who have been seeing from the right-wing reaction against people, you know, organizing for Black Lives Matter. And again, as we saw yesterday, there's no doubt about it that the playbook is changing and the right wing more accurately, I would say, like, this tenet, this kind of Trumpist aspect of the right wing is much more prepared to participate in violent and extremely dangerous protests. So I think that your first point there is correct. I would just say that, like, there are different sections of the right wing movement and more, but they have just, like, allowed this kind of part of their movement to kind of fester for expedient purposes. Like, the GOP let Trump come into power, not because they liked him or that they even liked the people that he emboldened, but because they knew this is a great way to get judges. This is a great way to push through these tax cuts. This is a great way for us to destroy the any semblance that's left of, you know, social democratic or, you know, reforms that have been won in this country. This is a way for us to wage war on the welfare system of the United States, right? That's why they've let this group in, and they've completely lost control. I think there's no doubt about it. I think I always said a great example of that is what happened in Texas when Governor Greg Abbott, who's, you know, is a wacko and a real right winger, but when his, like, suicidal COVID policies, right, were being protested, that was a real moment. It's like, oh, they've lost control of this segment of their group. I think that it's important, though, to not overinflate their size and influence, and more to recognize, okay, this is a section of the right wing that we do have to focus on. As the people on the left who are covering this, I think it's not directly what you're talking about, but one of the better resources for looking into right-wing ideology and right-wing politics is a friend, you know, Matt Sittman's podcast, Know Your Enemy. That's a phenomenal way to look into the kind of, you know, right-wing mind of politics.
Yeah, I feel like Sittman even had a tweet that I liked, very relevant to this topic, but I don't know if I've been liking way too much the last few days to find it. But yeah, we're basically I think it was something to the effect, I think this was Sittman, but we're at the effect where a reactionary party that has inherited power that's not popular, like, right, like it, like, right, is realizing that, I mean, they have been realizing, like, as far as I've been aware of politics, the GOP has been attacking voting rights, right? Yeah, the ability of people to vote. But that realization eventually, like, reaches a critical mass. And mm-hmm. I mean, I'm a person who would love to see the GOP get destroyed by their contradictions in something like this. But I mean, they had a worse defeat to LBJ a century ago based on these exact same themes, basically saying, like, Goldwater, like, I want the rights that masters had, but we just want to translate them to this century. And like, that is always going to be here.
No, we understand. I think that's on point. We have actually a decent amount of questions, so I'm going to try to get to them.
Cool.
Silverball Stud asks, in beer conversations with less political acquaintances, what is the fulcrum of critique to hit them with referring to Trump's insurrection/coup events at the Capitol? Wokeism, white supremacy, capitalism, jump straight to spectacle. That's the end of it. I think that they're sort of asking, like, what's the takeaway to sort of talk to, you know, a normal person? How should we read this? I think the best thing that I've read on this was by Mike Davis in Sidecar, which is a New Left Reviews sort of like daily blog. And it was talking about, one, don't let people chalk this up to working class outrage. This honestly was very much more petty bourgeois to bourgeois, you know, outrage at the system. I think it's important to recognize its serious threat and organization, but also, again, not to overstate it, because you have to understand what they did yesterday was very worrying, and it'd be a lot more worrying if they had more people. But what happened yesterday was literally an act of desperation. I mean, that's just a losing side, you know, trying to do what they can. And, you know, it was very dramatic. It cost people their lives. And, you know, it's something we'll remember for a very long time. But again, it was a failed movement from a movement that is losing right now. Yeah. I think that's an important message to take away from it.
The only worrying thing about it is what happens, what that looks like changes if something larger happens later. And that looks like a moment where people say, oh, this stuff is touchable. And we can get into Congress with our guns and our tasers and our zip tie handcuffs. I think my gut says that you deploy the National Guard and, you know, and those giant barriers, and these guys don't have the heart to, you know, start open firing. But we're even calculating this is pretty terrifying. And I don't know if people saw it. The woman getting shot video is nuts. You can see the Secret Service guy's gun from out of this corner, just waiting for somebody to go through this hole that they're breaking through this door. She starts climbing over it. He caps her. And one guy literally says it was a flashbang grenade. No, it wasn't. That woman just got shot in the neck for trying to break into the Chamber of Congress. The instant willingness to like create a fantasy that, I don't know. They got the delusional people amped up. And I mean, I'm sorry that Josh Hawley lost a book deal, but I do think that, like, you know, and I don't know where all this stuff to, you know, impeach Trump or throw out the members of Congress that that have supported this stuff every step of the way will go. But I think it is the right thing to do. I think these are, like, I think the word fifth column is historically relevant here. Like, these people, from the second the election was over, were trying to overthrow it. And they didn't have a real chance of doing it, but that doesn't matter. They were still aspiring to that. And I think that needs to be elaborated for people. Because there are going to be a lot of people that see that and recognize that. And I don't think their answers say, like, don't believe your lying eyes, that this wasn't actually that serious.
No, I think that's on point. We have a few of these, so I'm going to try to get through them. And then I think we'll do two more, and then we'll come back to the rest after we go through the New York Times, which is focusing on the big issues today. But Big Arm Charlie, thank you. That says, congratulations on the launch. So happy to hear from Malaika. One of the thoughts I had yesterday was, I'm afraid the Dems won't be able to tie Republicans to these events in any meaningful way. Any chance you can give me some optimism that Mitch won't leverage this crisis more effectively than Dems, despite having control of the House and Senate?
Well, I will just say it wasn't a good sign that Democrats like announced that they were going to leave, pack it up Congress after this. Or Congress itself decided that. But I think what I've seen is like about enough. Like, I think they were smart actually to put it on the cabinet with the 25th Amendment stuff. I know that there's no expectation that that's going to happen, but at least you give them every chance publicly as a news story to say, hey, do you want to step in now? And because otherwise we see these people just Mitch McConnell's wife, Chao, just resigning. And it's like, no, don't resign. Use the 25th Amendment if you're so like concerned about this stuff. And like I said about the thing earlier about Pelosi calling out members that are blaming Antifa, like I think they're doing it now. Whether that can overpower all the disinformation and all the misinformation by people like on CNN calling them anarchists and, you know, it remains to be seen, because our culture is, you know, are set up to basically weaponize this stuff to create defense contracts and security contracts.
I think that's definitely on point. And like, I'll say, like, politically, I think Cori Bush pushing, to target Republican lawmakers who incited violence, I think that's a political tactic that hopefully, bears some fruit. I'd say, like, there's no doubt about it. I think that your question is 100% right. To be worried that people like McConnell and a bunch of these other Republicans who are now trying to distance themselves from this movement that has kept them and brought them into power for a very long time is one, you know, it's cynical, and we just can't let them get away with that. And I understand your worries about the incompetence of the Democratic Party to tie them to that. But I will also say this. This is probably one of the most unpopular things to happen in American politics in a long time. Of course, there are wackos all around the country who really love seeing this. I'm telling you, a lot of even Republicans were furious. You know, they are upset about this. And I think
the polling is not great. Like, it's 45%, which is like, people have posted that around, like, it's appalling that many people supported it. But 45% is not, like, Trump gets 9% of Republicans, right? Like, that is a huge split in the Republican Party.
Yeah, so there's a huge split, and we should take advantage of that to marginalize both sides of the Republican Party. And last question before we get to this New York Times story from Edwin, Mr. Edwin. Hey, David, Matt, what a joy to hear from you again. Thank you. I'm on board with defunding the police, and at the same time, I wonder, is there any hope to Trojan horse or proletarianize militarized institutions like the police, Marines, or military? ACAB, F-12 aside, it can't hurt to have people on the inside of these institutions that we want to dismantle. In particular, I keep thinking of the ANC's struggle with this. Solidarity from Boston.
That, I mean, I was going to say Mandela goes specifically into, like, cultivating police and army, you know, members. I definitely think that you look at the type of people who become particularly members of the military. That said, I think there is a huge problem with white supremacy in the military. I mean, the woman who was shot was a vet. And I think that's by design. I think there's a cultivation of that. I mean, I remember early on in my political awareness reading a Christopher Hitchens column about, like, evangelical, like, white supremacist evangelical missionaries in Iraq, and, like, the type of insane save the world for Christ preachings that were going on. I think it made me ramble a bit, but.
No, I think that's on point. The police, I think, is a little difficult to figure out just because of how they recruit and how they brainwash. I think they're talking like long-term socialist kind of strategy, societal transformation. There is no doubt about it that, you know, rank and file members of the military will be people that we need to be including. We talk about this a lot on this show, actually. You know, we have some really great, you know, folks, including, I remember, you know, Isaiah James, who ran for Congress in New York. You know, he's, a veteran, and has comes out on the other side, anti-war and against the, you know, these horrible budgets. And somebody who can also talk to a lot of folks who get wrapped up in the system. Matt and I have talked about this before. I've talked about it, you know, publicly on this show. I came very close to being, pulled into the poverty draft of the military. And I know a hell of a lot of other people who get pulled in as well. And you have to understand that once you get pulled in, you are stuck. And a lot of people get pulled in when they are young, and then they realize that they don't want to participate in this system anymore, but they know that, you know, if they leave, not only will their lives be ruined, but they face jail time, right? These are not lost classes. I don't know why people get so worked up about refusing to understand that the United States military very much uses poverty to recruit people into the military. Don't get me wrong. The United States military is a force for imperialism, and the leadership of that organization is just unendingly reactionary. But they're just write off a huge part of the American population, one who actually knows a lot better than I think a lot of people think, the horrors of American war, and also the horrors of just American capitalism. I think that's absolutely the wrong strategy.
Yeah, I remember being pitched military recruiters in high school, and they made it seem like it's almost like half college, half travel agency. Like, you want to see the world and get any skill you want and huge benefits. Like, it's that part's pretty disgusting. And I think there should be a lot of sympathy for people who get caught up in that, because I mean, it's particularly in times where, like, there's not wage increases. There's, like, the economy sucks for the average person. I mean, that's why I said that I wanted to be a fucking Marine to a recruiter at school once. And, like, they kept calling me all throughout college. My dad answered the phone all the time. And I remember he asked me, like, why did you, like, show any interest in that? And I said, like, one, like, I was influenced by the media. And two, like, it was a way to get out of North Dakota.
Yeah.
And, like, literally, it was only the Iraq war and my consciousness of that probably stopped me from choosing that, because it didn't seem that, it seemed kind of cooler than going to college, actually.
I mean, my family is on, you know, is very much, you know, military and Navy. So, you know, I don't know. I mean, I grew up around, you know, the kind of like people who make up that system. So it wasn't foreign to me, but it was funny.
Right.
You know, so obviously one, growing up super poor, not knowing how you're going to pay for college, made a huge impact on me. And then, I don't know what we're going to do after school. Anyways, but it was really funny because, yeah, they do, you know, they come to your high school and they recruit you, and they can start to recruit you, you know, at 17, you know, two. And I had, you know, given them, oh, I'm interested or whatever. And then again, as you're saying, constant calls. But what was really funny for me is when I decided not to join, I continue to get recruiting calls. And this one recruiter would call me all the time, like every couple months, and would talk to me about my son. And he'd be like, David, you know, don't you want a brighter future for your son? And if anybody doesn't know, like, I don't have any children, right? nor did I then. You know, so it was just like, you could just tell it was a script, just hoping to catch people from the part of the country that I was, knowing my socioeconomic status, that you can just sort of guilt people who might have just had a very significant life event to trying to, you know, to make them worry about their future. And it always cracked me up, though, knowing obviously that, you know, that wasn't the case for me, but they know who they're recruiting and they know how to recruit them.
Oh, man. I just found this video that's going around. I think this is accurate. This is, let me make sure this is the right one. So this is a guy going around on TikTok asking members of the military what they would say about the people they recruited them. And this is amazing.
Tell your recruiter right now.
Fuck you.
What would you tell your recruiter right now?
Fucking die.
What would you tell your recruiter right now?
You know, I don't even remember that.
Why didn't you tell me to reclass?
What would you tell your recruiter right now?
Eat shit and die, you fat bitch.
Jesus. What would you tell your recruiter right now?
Fuck you and his unit.
What would you tell your recruiter right now?
Bitch, kill yourself.
What would you tell your recruiter right now?
I would tell my recruiter that he was a good recruiter because he didn't suck dick and he didn't fuck me like he did all the other guys, and that I did pick a good MLS.
Fair enough. What would you tell your recruiter right now?
I thought we were better than this, man. You grew with me. Fuck you.
Hey, what would you tell your recruiter right now?
I'd tell my uncle that he's an asshole.
What would you tell your recruiter right now?
Why did you lie to me?
Yeah, why did you lie to me?
Why did you lie to me?
Jeez. Wow, that's it right there. Yeah, man. I think that puts it, you know.
That's why Trump wants to ban TikTok. That video right there. Jesus.
Well, should we get to this New York Times piece before we knock out the rest of the Discord questions?
Yeah, let's do it.
So this COVID crisis has been devastating for many people, many professions across the country. We have seen the standard of living for most people drop immensely. People's hope for the future, you know, be pretty much smothered by our failed governments, just honestly draconian COVID crisis. I mean, COVID response. But the New York Times actually wanted to make sure that we were looking out and worrying about some people who have lost so much during this COVID crisis. That is the young upstarts who are looking to have a lucrative career in the oil and gas industry. So this is from Gus Bova, who tweeted this out, who is a really great reporter at the Texas Observer, by the way. Definitely follow him and check out his work. Well, do you want to go to the article, or do you want to just go to the bit that he...
Yeah, I guess let's do the bit here. Did you ever hear... Or you go ahead.
So basically, this piece is about primarily, from what I remember the article, pretty much everybody in there was at University of Texas at Austin, or like Rice University, University of Houston, people in Texas. And if you go to school there, you could basically go into like petroleum engineering programs, obviously because oil is so big in Texas. And basically this whole young generation, which is joining the rest of disappointed college grads in this country, realizing there's not really a future in oil, because the industry has been so devastated. And look, there's parts of that, you know, movement that I feel for, just understanding that, like, you know, you go to school and you know, it's hopefully, you know, going to be a path to you, to your future. Like, I get that a little bit, but it is very funny to sit here in the middle of this COVID crisis and trying to make people feel bad for folks who are, you know, willingly trying to join executive, offices in one of the most devastating and wicked industries of the country.
Writing's been on the wall, guys. I mean, let's play, show this.
Yeah, because the quote's so good.
Yeah. Did you ever hear of a solar panel? She recalls the Uber driver asking her and her friends. The silent judgment and passing comments weighed a lot on me, she added. Her parents persuaded her to stick with her program. Fucking parents.
Yeah.
God
parents,
damn.
Parents play a big role in this, and a lot of the people who are interviewed, you know, are 100%. Folks who have deep family connections in the oil industry. And look, I've been pretty outspoken about this, that, you know, a big part of the Green New Deal needs to include the just transition, which means bringing in, you know, the real deal oil workers who form the backbone of that system. Because like it or not, we do live in a society right now that is very dependent on oil and gas, right? And those workers, we can disagree with the executive policies. We can disagree and also criticize the oil and gas industry at large. But you also need to understand that it does play a function in society, right? And what we need to be doing right now is recruiting the members, the rank and file members of those organizations to join and fight with the labor movement for a Green New Deal, right? That's politics. That's what we have to do. But I'm not going to sit here and shed any tears over people who are trying to join the executive order of the oil and gas industry, right? The people who want to sit on the top and pollute and lie to this country. Give me a break. Absolutely not. And that quote there, Matt, is really funny because the Uber driver in Austin was driving this young student to a oil and gas like lobbying gala dinner and was just harassing them about destroying the environment.
What's so interesting to me is the cultivating of the next ruling class and how brainless they are. Right. Like, look, I'm sorry. It took a uncomfortable Uber ride for you to understand what you were doing was heinous. You had the option of all these careers. And because mommy and daddy told you to stick with the practical choice of becoming an oil executive.
Because there's a shale boom. It's a shale boom. Right. I mean, like extremely damaging environmental practice. If oil and gas aren't, you know, damaging enough on their own, extremely damaging practice that, you know, your parents are saying like, oh, this is a great way for you to make a lot of money. I'll tell you one thing, like you read the the Financial Times, the publications that really, you know, wade deep into the issues of the oil and gas industry. There is a whole class of new executives of the oil industry who get it. Right. And they get these fawning pieces like, oh, this guy, you know, this new CEO of this upstart shale company in Texas really understands that oil is not the future and that we need green energy and all this kind of stuff. Yep. Right. And all this fawning over them while they continue to contribute to the most damaging system. I mean, it's hypocrisy. Well, and it's just like the new spin that they're trying to do is like, oh, I understand that this is bad, but also I'm going to do it anyway because somebody's got to do it, right?
Well, it's like we assume that's greenwashing their company for the public at large, but I am growing more and more convinced that those are taken for the people inside, that you are trying to retain young talent and you need to say some shit. And I think I think it's not just oil. It does. I think Facebook does some of this stuff too. Like, I think it's when you run one of these things and it's sort of mercilessly run at the top, you occasionally can do things like this to basically make it easier to recruit. Because I can say this, I'll just say, my brother wouldn't mind. My brother recently had to make a choice between going to work for an oil company in North Dakota or working for equipment, a heavy machinery company. And he chose the latter for specifically this reason of like, it's extremely cyclical and psychopathic at the top. Yeah. Right? Like these are decisions people are aware about.
I'll also say it's very funny. The piece is very funny to just talk about people who are trying to be, you know, execs basically at these oil companies. Right. I hesitate. I don't want to dunk on these people too much personally, these young people, because like they also do get fed a lot of propaganda that like the oil industry is turning green. As Matt was just saying, right. They get fed that at school. And you know, hopefully they'll make the correct decision here that's a bunch of horse shit. Something better.
And to the extent that these aren't all rich kids, they're also victims of high education prices, because why would you consider going to an oil executive? I think some people just want to be greedy, but it's also like, oh shit, I'm going to have to take out how much money for education? I'm going to need something that pays. Like, I am convinced that, I mean, I take it from somebody who went to NYU and was like, maybe I should try to work for one of these tech monopolies to try to pay for this education, right? Like, that's what education financing does. So yeah, I think it is funny, but it's also, it shows how this can be done on a structural level that doesn't need conspiracy. Really, like, this is just these people that, yeah, did you ever hear of a solo panel? I hope I can eventually put all my skills and knowledge to work. It's like, and this vague, like, this vague individualistic thing about, I want to go change the world.
Yeah. Right?
Like, oh yeah, you could change the world at an oil company. You fucking,
you definitely can. Are going change to it. Be
yeah. yeah, exactly.
I think we got to get back to some of these Discord questions because we could go on this all night. But just as a fun little tidbit for patrons, Matt was talking about how he almost did, you know, or is considering for like a hot second tech work. You know, I used to be a big, you know, cigarette smoker. I just kicked again the habit. But, you know, after college, you know, smoking or whatever. And I thought one of the funniest pitches that I got from our career counselor was for me to go work at Marlboro. And he's like, you got to understand, it makes you make really good money. Young people don't want to work there because it's an old industry.
Yeah. Like
you can make six figures in your first year.
Right. Matt, it makes me also ashamed that I, Peter Thiel backed movie, Thank You for Smoking. It's like, just watch that and say the like. You know, you're like champ kind from
it. Like, honestly, like, it's the same thing in the tobacco industry too. Like, they get that tobacco is bad for you now, right? Like, you know, the whole thing is like, they understand that tobacco is not good. So we don't give it to children, and it's just for discerning individuals who want to make that. It's bullshit. You know, they're still selling an addictive product. And, you know, again, this is somebody who partakes from time to time in that industry. I'm just saying it's really nasty. Right. The kind of cynicism and like the way that they try to modernize themselves, like, oh, we get it now. We understand. It's like, no, they've always understood. That's why they spent so much money destroying any research that showed the devastation that smoking causes on the human body. Anyway, well, this could go on all night. So
it is funny. I just want to make one note. Yeah. I've been doing my 17th century research on Virginia tobacco.
Oh, that's fascinating.
And there's an argument that he makes, William Byrd, that because pestilence and plague is a huge problem there. People are constantly getting sick, and they do comment it's often hits the poorer parts of the community worse. But he said that tobacco smoke might do something positive to get the plague out of the air. So it just keep smoking tobacco. And so maybe that's just what we need for coronavirus. Is just,
yeah. Well, that's what they were saying at first, was that coronavirus was, you know, could be killed by cigarette smoke. That was my favorite.
That was the thing. I didn't even
know. Yeah. Early on, they were like, yes, yeah, smokers like die less of it. So
that's awesome.
So light up.
Of course. 400 years and running.
Yeah, exactly. So here's one. I'll keep their name private because they asked me to. As far as direct action over electoralism for Medicare for All, what do you think about trying to organize nationwide mass boycotts of private health insurance, coupled with protests and marches, cripple the industry and force government's hand? Hey, I hear, you know, don't get me wrong, love the idea of like militancy. I don't think that pulling people off their insurance, having them risk that, is particularly helpful.
That doesn't seem boycottable.
It doesn't seem boycottable. And also, you know, the other issue there too is that we don't have that like power to do that, like to say, okay, this is the strategy and this is what we're doing. And if we build that, I think we should just lobby to get Medicare for All instead of creating some new interregnum where people, you know, aren't getting covered. Or I assume actually he's talking about just like people don't pay your insurance bill, but obviously, you know,
I mean, things like debt strikes would be interesting. Like, yeah. Fuck medical debt. Don't pay it. Don't pay student loan debt. I mean, more consciousness like that would be interesting. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think so, too. We have a few of these, so I'm going to get through these a little quicker. Wizardly Blood says, the man photographed in Nancy Pelosi's desk, we talked about him earlier, lives one county away from me in Arkansas. It's got me thinking, what happens to these folks once they go underground, writ large? I think there is a growing sense among the Republicans that their electoral hold in national politics is really starting to slip. I find it a disturbing possibility that they enact the typical grassroots takeover of local governments more so than already. This is a good point. They've been doing that all over the country for the past few months and make life hell for whoever is on the chopping block, BIPOC, LGBT, immigrants, etc., in the flyover states. I sense there must be some retribution from these folks for the fall of Trump. What shape do you guys think that takes?
I don't know. I guess we heard during, was it COVID, or no, it was during the wildfires last fall, that like QAnon guys or militia guys were stopping traffic and asking people in cars, like basically doing traffic stops. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think that stuff, that sort of thing in certain communities, I think that is possible. Mm-hmm. That said, I guess on the other side, I don't know how I'm one thing about QAnon and the right in general is I think it's very inchoate, and like, I don't know how that's going to serve in terms of organizing something like that.
Well, I think without having the Trump stuff, it's going to be a little bit harder for them to take orders, right? In the sense that like Trump, in the same way that like Bernie Sanders united a lot of different people, like Trump was able to bring a lot of loonies together. And what we'll see now is the InfoWars people go one direction. The gun nuts go one direction. The abortion people go one direction. Those paths, are going to cross, no doubt about it. But I do think that there is going to be a break of that kind of coalition that was able to basically put Trump into power in the first place, and then, you know, support him through these horrible, you know, right wing, attacks. I also think that the GOP is prepared to throw these people to the trash. I don't think they'll do it rhetorically, but I think they're going to be listening to them a little bit less in the near future. That also might mean more agitation from these kind of loonies. I mean, the genie's not going back in the bottle. There's no doubt about it. I do think though that the Republicans, a lot of them are going to try to move in a somewhat different direction, except for the ones, obviously, who are Trumpers. I mean, there are a lot of new people who were brought into this most recent Congress specifically because they're conspiracy theorists and crazy Trumpers. And like those people are going to continue to agitate. But it'll be interesting. But
will
to
it be
see.
Political agitation, or will it be some Looney Tunes shit that like is peripheral?
I think there's going to be much more Looney Tunes stuff. I think there's going to be big rallies like this, we just need to be really prepared for it. More reason than
related,
ever.
Yeah. I see. I just wanted to say, kind of related to this from Samantha Sider, with the news of the first Republican outside of Romney, Adam Kinzinger, calling for the removal of Trump from office, how much of a schism would the events of yesterday create in the Republican Party?
I think a big one. I think, as we said at the top of the episode, that this is an out for some of them. They're going to use this as an out to say, we weren't a part of this. This is, doesn't represent us. This doesn't represent the Republican Party. I think they, because they got what they wanted from the Trump movement, and, you know, they got what they wanted. They're going to try to walk the other way. They're going to try to do it, I think, some of them are going to try to do it more tactically, tactfully than others. Just because, you know, they did create this voting base, this rabid voting base, and I don't think that they want to alienate all of them. But I think you're going to see a lot of people sort of walk back, and then don't let dumbass liberals rehabilitate them like they've done with Mitt Romney, you know what I mean, who ran a disgusting racist and right-wing campaign against Obama in 2012. And it just made, like, this is 8 years ago. Forget how, you know, the short-term memory when it comes to Bush, the short-term memory when it comes to McCain and Romney is like a never-ending surprise to me.
Yeah. I got these up now too, if you want me to read.
Okay,
some
cool.
Them.
Yeah.
The last 4 years have been both sort of a terror farce, and I think that truly fascist uprisings must also look like farce. Would a Republican congressional majority have literally undone the election? How about the next time? Will the Capitol riot be our, well, I mean, it's hard to say, but I think my thinking as far as like an actual coup where, you know, Republicans in power decide to like throw it to the Supreme Court, for instance, I think that was less likely at the pace that Republicans for like approve Trump's judges in the first. Like he was losing leverage every time he did that. And I think a lot of them are just authoritarian nuts, so they don't get that calculus, but the like Mitch McConnell does. And he's like that's why he's not about to. Yeah, I think that, you know, I guess the question is the authoritarian nutbag constituency powerful enough at this point? And I think not quite would be.
Yeah, right. Exactly. I think this is a very serious threat, and I'm not downplaying it at all. But what we saw yesterday was a very frightening moment, but it was like, you know, they're at the 10-yard line with no time left on the clock, and they threw a Hail Mary, and there's that moment when it's in the air that it's very scary, and then you realize it just, you know, pluttered on the ground. Like, this was an act of, like, pure desperation, and it was more of them trying to show that we have the ability to do more than you think that we would. We aren't the kind of typical political coalition. I think that is a threat that we should take very seriously. But at the same time, don't let these people think of themselves as more powerful than they are, because that is going to be that's a big part of like a fascist movement, for example, is seeming like it's all consuming and all powerful, right? Just like this undeniable historical moment. This is still a vast minority of the country. And I think we need to do as much as we can to sideline and to remind people of just how small of a segment of the population this is, and how they have influence. They have obviously the ability to do this kind of stuff, but again, very fragmented and not, a winning political movement at this present time.
Right. So quick one from Social Justice Wizard. Thoughts on the CIA website redesigned? Yeah, they just covered
it's pretty good.
The Intercept format, basically. Any thoughts on Biden picking Boston Mayor Marty Walsh for Labor Secretary? Not a good pick, from what I know of Marty Walsh.
Yeah.
Isn't he a Republican, literally? Yeah, I think he is. Marty Walsh, isn't? I thought for sure he was actually literally a Republican. Maybe I'm wrong about that, but maybe Boston can get a better mayor. I guess he is a Democrat. I don't know who I'm thinking of.
Yeah, I can't remember. I know you talk. I know there was. They brought somebody in, but I can't remember who it is right now.
Let's see. Some Epinder did a deep dive on the face recognition BS. I'd like to request. This is from Joe Snuffy. I'd like to request the Left Reckoning bumper stickers to become a thing.
Oh, that's a great
good
idea.
Yeah, actually,
idea a lot.
We should be able to get on that. I can't let the 3%ers have more representation at work. Blitzkrieg 84. Hey, Matt and David. Times are difficult. What are your favorite drinks? Bourbon recommendations. Bullet is what I've been drinking recently. I must admit, during COVID, I've been drinking less, a lot less. I've been doing other things, but
I've been drinking too much. But which means I have some good bourbon recommendations. My favorite everyday bourbon is Buffalo Trace. I just think it's delicious. I'm a big fan of Wild Turkey, yes, because I'm an idiot and Matthew McConaughey is like their spokesperson. Fancy bourbons, my favorite. I'm talking fancy, like $50. Rowan's Creek is really good. Just the perfect kind of sipping bourbon. I also got really into Balcones recently too, which is a Texas bourbon. I usually don't like those. I'm not Texas in particular, but I'm a big, like, Kentucky's gone. They got to figure it out. Just let them do their bourbon. Like, we don't need everyone to, like, every state to have their own bourbon tradition. Kentucky has got to unlock, but I will say I've had some really nice bourbons from there. Ben Burgess actually gave to me for my birthday this year a really nice bottle of Balcones, which I really appreciated.
Oh, nice.
And also, nice. I also think just football talk. I don't know if you have any preference here. I would like to see a Seahawks victory, actually. I think that'd be more fun than the Rams.
Seahawks versus the Rams?
Yeah.
I'll be honest, I'm not following football super close.
Screw all. No loyalty Rams versus, like, you know, a football program that has deep roots in their community.
How's is Metcalf doing much this year?
It's all right.
Yeah, okay. Hey, how do y'all – this is from Champagne Communista. How do y'all feel about Holly's book deal getting canceled? Yeah, let's go to this.
It's awesome.
The war – free speech is just under attack in this country. And so here's a press release from Simon & Schuster. After witnessing the disturbing, deadly insurrection that took place on Wednesday in Washington, D.C., Simon & Schuster has decided to cancel publication of Senator Josh Hawley's forthcoming book, The Tyranny of Big Tech. We did not come to this decision lightly. As a publisher, it will always be our mission to amplify a variety of voices and viewpoints. At the same time, we take seriously our larger public responsibility as citizens and cannot support Senator Hawley after his role in what became a dangerous threat to our democracy and freedom. And this is Josh Hawley's response. My statement on the woke mob at Simon & Schuster. It's a lot of these woke mobs.
Simon & Schuster, man. Give me a break.
The wokes at Simon & Schuster. And Josh says, this could not be more Orwellian. Simon & Schuster is canceling my contract because I was representing my constituents. I would say misleading your constituents. Leading a debate on the Senate floor on voter integrity, which they have now decided to redefine as sedition. Let me be clear. This is not just a contract dispute. It's a direct assault on the First Amendment. I'm hearing that.
Oh, shut up, dude.
Only approved speech can now be published. This is the left at Simon & Schuster looking to cancel everyone they don't approve of. I will fight this time. I will fight this cancel culture with everything I have. We'll see you in court. Oh, yeah. Nice, good bro. Fucking luck with that lawsuit.
What happened also to exactly. What happened to capitalism? What happened to private companies being able to make their own decisions, regardless of how popular it is, right? Shut the hell up. These guys are hypocrites. We know it. But shut the fuck.
My joke was, he had this book called The Tyranny of Big Tech. It's now The Tyranny of Big Publishing. So maybe Josh Hawley should stop confining his critique of industry to one single industry and come on board the anti-capitalism.
Hell yeah. Train. I don't know if we want him on, but okay.
No, yeah.
I know, I'm just messing.
I got a question for me here from David Hellman. Matt, have you been to Medora, North Dakota? It's a touristy cowboy town. I was there in September on a long social distance road trip, and Teddy Roosevelt Park is right there, full of prairie dogs. Yes, I was actually there this summer. I showed my girlfriend Medora, actually. Me and my parents drove out there. And so many prairie dogs. It's ridiculous. and it is a big – it's close. It's not exactly where, but close to where Teddy Roosevelt got his, Wild West bona fides in the Dakotas. And also now they're agitating for a multi-million dollar presidential library for Teddy Roosevelt to go there. Go on.
I can't talk about this on stream. I'm sorry. I should have brought it
about
up.
Teddy?
No, about the library, but I can't. I'll have to talk to you later about it. I'm sorry.
Oh, interesting. I'll... Okay. I mean, I was going to say, I'm not going to be offended if you talk poorly of Teddy Roosevelt.
Oh, absolutely not. Screw him.
Yeah. Okay. But Medora is an interesting town. I mean, the Little Bighorn River, or the Little Missouri River. I'm confused. One of those goes through there. A Little Bighorn River's in Montana. That's where Custer got his comeuppance. But nice. Beautiful, beautiful. The Badlands there. And then we have one more question on your left. Often the left makes the mistake that people are being cynical. As someone who works at a big tech company, trust me, people are sincere as fuck about their horrible beliefs. Interesting. I'd like to know specific ones, because I am down to believe that people are sincerely horrible and cynical. I think there's a lot of that going on.
I think there's two different things. I think there's some people who actually really believe really horrific things. And then I also think that there are a lot of people out there who have no depth to their beliefs, but just know what side that they want to be lined up on.
Like the base.
Right? That's a cynical. That's a cynical. Yeah, exactly. That's a cynical belief, right? Does not mean that. I mean, honestly, being cynical is almost worse in a lot of ways and then having deep rooted beliefs. But for sure. Well, dude, I think this was a pretty good post game. We've went on for a little while. I want to let people know we'll be back next week, same time. We're really looking forward to that. We're going to do a deeper dive into the potential union at Alphabet, Google. We want to make sure that we sort of had a little bit more information before we dove deep into that. But it's a very interesting story. I think we'll also have more information too on the union fight in Alabama. next week as well too. So stay tuned. I'll try to get.
I guess we'll talk a little bit. I want to do my rant against venture capitalists, and we'll also talk a little bit about the firings that have happened in the wake of the Prop 22 stuff.
Yeah.
In California. I mean, that Prop 22 really feels like that's going to be.
That's a historic moment. There's no doubt about it. We're going to be fighting that for a long time. Yeah. But until then, everybody, take care. See you soon.